The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High five!
High five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
You may know Jackson Pollock, the painter famous for his iconic drip paintings. But what do you know about his wife, artist Lee Krasner? On Death of an Artist, Krasner and Pollock, the story of the artist who reset the market for American abstract painting. Just maybe not the one you're thinking of. Listen to Death of an Artist, Krasner and Pollock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
From the Abraham Lincoln Radio Studio at the George Washington Broadcast Center,
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
President Biden was recently presented with polls, according to NBC News, showing that his handling of the Israel-Hamas war is costing him support in swing states. And upon seeing these polls, quote, he began to shout and swear.
When he does that, is he shouting and swearing about Netanyahu or about Hamas or about his poll numbers?
This is the when did you stop beating your spouse question, because I don't think he ever did that. You use that as the premise of your question, which is when he does that. I've never seen him do that, shout or swear in response to that. So from my perspective, that particular report is not correct.
That was a report by NBC, by the way. That was Peter Ducey of Fox there asking about it, but it was an NBC report last week that said he was shouting and yelling behind the scenes about why people are angry about his policy in Israel. But that aside, Tom Friedman writing in the New York Times for the 1,000,000th time about a two-state solution that nobody but him and college professors want, including, by the way, here's a journalist tweeting out, a reminder that there's not a single Palestinian leader, past or present, who wants a two-state solution. It's a fantasy of American liberals. Recent polling shows two-thirds of Israelis now don't want a two-state solution. That's not what the numbers were pre-October 7th, but that's what they are now. So two-thirds of Israelis say no. Three-quarters of Gazans say no. Other than that, it's a great idea. What are you talking about?
That is striking. What was that phrase about wish of American liberals or something like that? That's good. That's accurate.
Yeah, it really is now. It's just Tom Friedman and some college professors that think this is a good idea. The people involved don't want it, but maybe you think it'd be a good idea.
Yeah, yeah, and you'll go on lecturing the people who actually live there and have to live with the results of your plans. Not to go into the history of it, but there have been multiple occasions where the PLO or the PLA or whomever got like everything they asked for and they backed out at the last second. Multiple times. So in the absence of October 7th, could you maybe think Israel would think, yeah, maybe these new leaders, they're actually ready to make a deal? Yeah, I mean, that would be kind of awfully optimistic, but I could believe it. But in the wake of October 7th, given the history of it, it's an idiotic fantasy.
It is. But keep writing that same column, Tom Friedman. Maybe someday you'll get your wish.
I hope he's got the good sense to just recycle his old ones and change a couple of the names and dates.
Well, his main point was he thought Schumer's speech was awesome and well-deserved. Anyway, different topic. The thing going on in blue cities around the country where criminals can commit the same crime over and over again and we don't put them in jail for some reason?
Or a variety of exciting different crimes, too.
This is one of the most extreme examples I've seen out of New York, and it's just amazing. You can't believe this is happening. Headline, violent vagrant has terrorized NYC neighborhood for a decade, but somehow remains free. A 33-year-old vagrant with a lengthy rap sheet has been the bane of a Brooklyn neighborhood for nearly 10 years with complaints of shoplifting, slugging women, and threatening local merchants at will, and yet he remains free to continue to wreak havoc. He's a registered sex offender named Christopher Boissard. He has been such a long-running menace in Greenpoint, that's an area of Brooklyn, that one shop owner keeps a metal rod handy just specifically for this guy so he can chase him away when he shows up at the door. The rod is especially for this guy, said the neighborhood bodega owner. He comes in the store screaming and tries to hit people. Everybody's scared of this guy. Many times he's punched women in the face inside the store and outside on the sidewalk. He's very dangerous. He's stolen from my store many times, beer, food, whatever he wants. This has been happening for at least 8 years, maybe more. The NYPD said this guy's been arrested by cops a dozen times since 2022 alone and sent to court for arraignment every single time, only to be released. In all, he's been busted 39 times since 2011 on charges that have ranged from assault to robbery to criminal mischief. Records show he has 24 incidents where he was listed as emotionally disturbed. According to court records, this guy was registered as a level 3 sex offender after he was convicted of molesting a 19-year-old woman in 2021 who was deaf and mute and did not know sign language, making it difficult to communicate. As a result, he's fallen through the cracks of the system. His arrests have typically only risen to the level of misdemeanors, which carry a maximum sentence of 1 year, and they don't actually chase that, so he just gets out. He's been deemed unfit for trial because of psychiatric exams a couple of times. It's another way that he continues to be on the street. Including with this last bust, an assault from July 19th incident where he allegedly walked up behind a woman in the neighborhood and slugged her in the head.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that amazing that that can go on anywhere? And that he's one of many in San Francisco, L.A., New York, Portland, you know, name that kind of city.
We used to not let somebody like that hurt people over and over again. More and more people molest women, punch them in the face. And by we, I mean humanity. And used to, I meant for the entire history of humanity. We had ways of dealing with this. Maybe they weren't the greatest. Maybe we could come up with better ways to deal with them. But we dealt with it. Now the vogue, the trend, the fashion is, no, just put them back on the street. That's compassionate. I swear, I'm befuddled by a lot of the modern world. I will repeat what I said earlier. When that DA election comes up, that county attorney, local prosecutor, whatever the terminology is where you live, pay attention to that stuff.
Yeah, and you know,
right now there are listeners in all sorts of red states who are saying, we don't let people punch women in the face in this state.
And obviously, if you or your family are actually hurt by one of these people that demonstrated to society over and over and over again that they were a danger, that is extra awful.
If you watch TV and movies a lot, I think you have in your head, and I kind of do, I almost don't even want to admit it, but you have in your head the idea that people get rubbed out all the time, especially in gritty New York. And I'm certainly not encouraging violence toward the mentally ill. It's abhorrent. But how is this guy still kicking around?
Oh,
how many women has he victimized and nobody's taken the law into their own hands? Again, not encouraging it. I'm just surprised.
Right. I had, before we take a break, I had one of those incidents the other day where I had been talking to my kids about maybe going to Canada for a vacation this summer. They've never been to another country and I haven't been to Canada for a while and I really like Canada. specifically talking about Victoria, how much I like Victoria on Vancouver Island. Put your car on the boat and it takes you over there. It's really awesome. Anyway, so I got a couple of different ads over the weekend for travel to Victoria. Now it's either my phone is listening to me and all of us and feeding us ads based on what it hears, which I think is what's happening, or I just noticed it because I'd been thinking about traveling and it, you know, I wouldn't have noticed it otherwise.
Have you, just to clarify, searched on Travel to Victoria?
Haven't looked into it at all yet.
Come on. I've gotten zero "why don't you come see beautiful Victoria" ads lately.
It just seems to me to defy logic that if it can listen to you, it's not listening for key phrases and targeting your ads based on that.
Of course it is.
Either, you know,
Google's one of the biggest lobbyists in America. Likewise, Meta and the other guys. And so, you know, maybe a scrap of information comes forward now and again. Sounds like they're listening to people. Yeah, we don't have time to investigate that. Sorry.
Brands? Locations? That would be really easy to just have it set to where it just hears Ford, Nike, Hilton, whatever, right? And then sends you stuff on that. Or locations, that'd be an easy one too.
All right, here, I got to try this. Let me think about this. Okay, I got a good one. And I'll report back tomorrow. You know, Jack, what I've always dreamed of, but I have no idea how to do, is to visit Albuquerque, New Mexico. Would I like to go to Albuquerque, New Mexico.
To buy a penis extender. He needs many penis extenders.
Oh, boy, I don't even know what that is.
Down this road lies madness.
But I tell you where they have penis extenders. Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I would love to travel. If only I knew how. There you go. I'll turn my phone back off, lock it. We'll see what happens.
And will you get ads for either one of those things?
Hey, Joe, have you heard about the Albuquerque penis extension clinic? Skip ad.
You'll have both a longer penis and a bunch of turquoise. It'll be fantastic. You know,
I like turquoise. I don't need it. And thank you very much. I don't need the other thing either.
So you say.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty. The Armstrong and Getty Show. Strong and Getty Show. The Armstrong and Getty Show.
So, Gladys, it was January 2007 that I, for some reason, and I don't even remember why, decided to go to Russia on vacation.
Russia! Was that when you were on your Russian author's kick?
I've always been on a Russian author's kick. But I'm a child of the Cold War. We're children of the Cold War. I've always been interested in the Soviet Union and Moscow and Red Square and all that sort of stuff. Historically, huge Russian literature guy. And I don't even remember how I made the decision. And it was during the period of time where, at least I thought, a lot of the world thought, Russia's actually, you know, becoming like a regular country and is sort of like a regular country. And I had done some world travel to easy places to travel to, like Mexico, Great Britain, Italy, other places, but tourist friendly enough that there was so much English around, it was really easy to get around. So I just assumed Russia, certainly Moscow and St. Petersburg, were similar. I mean, I didn't even really think about it. This is pre-smartphone, you know, by the way.
That reminds me, there, Judy and I were in a Munich train station. I want to make sure we got on the right train. And I asked a young woman, she's probably in her early 20s, "Excuse me, do you speak English?" And she said, "Of course I do." And she was German. And it wasn't contemptuous or anything, but she was like, "Well, of course I do, you silly man." So, yeah, that's a very different place than what you're about to describe.
Yeah, my limited world travel, it was effortless to get around. I mean, if you went into a big, giant, big city train station, There were signs in all kinds of languages, but lots of English. And there was an English map and, you know, people at the hotel. I mean, just it was not hard. It was not it wasn't really challenging at all.
Well, right. And even if you're you don't speak German, for instance, if you want the train to Stuttgart and there it says Stuttgart on the sign, well, you go there.
That's one of the problems that Russia's got that Cyrillic or whatever it's called alphabet. So their letters don't even match up. So there was zero English. That's my point. Zero. Yeah. So I land there. I barely get out of the airport because I was in trouble from the moment I got there because there was just no English around. There was no like exit this way. And again, this was pre-smartphones. So there was no looking it up or translate or anything like that. I had not been to a major international airport where it didn't have exit in English or something somewhere. Anyway, I couldn't even figure out how to get out of the airport. And then when I got to the whole customs thing and everything like that, there was some Russian guy there with a badge and a gun who wouldn't stop yelling at me. I mean, I showed him my passport. I'm trying to get out of there. And he just kept yelling at me, just kept screaming at me. And he's slamming my passport on the table and pointing at me and pointing at signs. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And I just kept shrugging my shoulders, and I thought, I'm stuck. I don't know what's going to happen. Are they going to put me in jail? Finally, he just waves me through. He just waves his arm like, I'm tired of this. You're pissing me off. I'm disgusted with you. He waves me out. So I'm through the turnstile, and now I'm into Russia. I'm into the part of the airport. And it was a struggle from the first second trying to figure out where the train station was. I was at the train station for 3 hours because I had a hotel room booked in St. Petersburg. I had to get on the 6-hour train to get there, and I'd booked everything in the United States. It was easy online. The train station, no English, not a single human being speaking English. There was no, you couldn't decipher the schedules or anything like that. I was lost. I was as lost as I could be. Finally, after 3 hours, I heard an English word from somebody who spoke English, a guy who traveled, and I went, I said, dude, I've been here for 3 hours. I have no idea. He helped me out and figured out how to get to St. Petersburg, but the whole trip ended up being that way, more or less. Like, trying to get to the bathroom or order a cup of coffee or wherever was just eat. Everything was just impossible.
I'm looking at the Cyrillic alphabet right now. Forget it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what is that?
It bears no resemblance to any sounds or anything you've ever heard. Right. So one of the funnier parts was I'm in Red Square. It looks just like it does on television and those big giant churches with the colored balls on top and Lenin's tomb and everything like that. And I'd seen all these Soviet Union parades with the Titan missiles and all that sort of stuff. It was fascinating to me to see that. But I went into a museum and I'm walking around this museum and there's no English anywhere. So I'm walking up to displays and looking at them just thinking, I wonder what this is. I'll be darned.
This looks old.
This is a military uniform of some sort. I don't know who it belonged to or for what war or what century. Anyway, I'll walk over here. I wonder what the heck that is. I mean, I wasn't in the museum very long because I thought, I'm not learning anything. Oh, God. It'd be easy now. Well, I wouldn't go to Russia now. Like I said, it was during that brief window where we kind of thought they were becoming a democracy or whatever. I wouldn't go now. But at least if I had a smartphone now, I could do the Google Translate and get around. But in one of the museums I went to, from the beginning, the number of Stalin statues I saw, that's what tripped me in thinking, okay, it's not headed the direction or something isn't quite what I thought it was. There's no way you're going to join the world of normal nations and have Stalin statues and Lenin statues all over the place. I mean, that's weird. One museum I was in was full of Stalin, like, dummies or whatever, like wax figurines with his arms around children and smiling. I mean, they're still doing the whole Uncle Joe thing.
Wow.
In their museums. I mean, one of the worst mass murders in the history of the planet. They were still doing that in 2007. So, and it's not shocking that it has gone back the direction of it has been the last 1,000 years of dictators and czars. That's hilarious walking around that museum. Ah, I guess I go look at this thing. I wonder what the hell that is.
An old box.
Armstrong and Getty.
The following is a high five moment from highfivecasino.com.
Welcome to Burger King. Jiffy. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah.
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your High Five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
It doesn't really matter if our president physically walks very well. I really only care about the way his brain works. But I just saw the latest video of him heading out to the helicopter, and he did that. I'm gonna take off running thing again. And it makes me laugh every time, where he gets like 1 foot up an inch higher, like he's going to run, and then he gives up. It's so weird. I just
like he's going to break into his look how young and vital I am trot that he used to do.
That he,
but now
did,
he can't.
That he did for all through his 50s, 60s, and 70s. He would jog a little bit, show you, but he obviously can't do it anymore, but every day he tries. It's just hilarious to me.
This is your jihad. Okay.
Why hasn't he given up on that?
Because like his brain doesn't work anymore.
Like I said the other day, I don't still try to touch the rim when we're shooting baskets. I've decided years ago I can't do it anymore. I wonder if I can now and try it again.
Well, and it's like your signature move was always to come out and immediately just jam one, just throw a ball down. But now, every time you walk onto a court, you walk toward the hoop and make a tiny little gesture toward the rim to remind everybody that this guy can't conceivably stuff a basketball anymore.
By the way,
so it's weird. It's drawing attention to it.
This just started a couple of days ago. I'm looking at the video from today, but somebody put it out a couple of days ago. So now somebody walks alongside him and then stands at the bottom of the stairs. Like I was mentioning last year, I think at some point he's going to slip and roll all the way to the bottom of the stairs. Well, now they have somebody stands right there at the bottom, like ready. He does the short stairs, and there's somebody there to help him if he falls over backwards. But they didn't used to have somebody there, so they must feel he's even less steady than he was before. Anyway, that's the latest in Joe Biden can't jog news. Making fun of Boeing. So John Oliver on his HBO show, I didn't see this, but I saw a clip on YouTube. This is kind of funny.
Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun was quick to take responsibility, saying Boeing is accountable. But when pressed on exactly what had taken place, had an odd response.
How did an unsafe airplane fly in the first place?
Because a quality escape occurred.
Can you explain what that means? What is a quality escape?
I think that's the description of what people are finding in their inspections. Anything that could potentially contribute to an accident.
What? Quality didn't escape. A part of the plane did. That's a terrible answer. When you're asked how an unsafe plane flew in the first place, we need more information than essentially the plane was unsafe. Yeah, everybody knows that. There's a f***ing hole in the side of it.
But I can't believe with the PR disaster Boeing is in, maybe the worst one I've ever seen for a major American company, he didn't have something better to than some rote corporate speak, a quality escape occurred. What the hell?
I think that's a great example of, if you're in a position like that, find somebody who you know will tell you the truth. Somebody comes to me and says, we're thinking of calling this a quality escape, Joe. What do you think? I would tell them, that's terrible.
I'll tell you what I think. I think late night comics are going to mock us over that phrase. That's what I think is going to happen.
I think that is hilariously stupid, sir. Are you kidding me? Are you pulling this a joke, right? Are you a jackass? Say you're a jackass, sir. I'm willing to go to work for any major corporation and fulfill that role. A quality escape. Great, Scott.
A quality escape occurred. I think that is clear. What?
That's not even Orwellian, because Orwell at least gave credit to our would-be oppressors that they would be reasonably good at their jobs. Unbelievable. Oh, speaking of our oppressors, this is the best, most balanced accounting of COVID lockdowns that you will hear anywhere. It is not from me directly. It's quoting Scott Atlas and Steve Hanke, Scott Atlas, fellow at Hoover Institution. We've talked to him many times. We've quoted him many times. Mr. Hanke is actually, interestingly, a professor of applied economics at Johns Hopkins. And they're co-authors with a couple of other folks of a recent report, COVID Lessons Learned. Having an economist involved is important for a variety of reasons that'll become more clear. But they write that they mentioned that it was 4 years ago this week that VP Mike Pence announced 15 days to slow the spread. You remember that? What followed was the unprecedented use of lockdowns, school closings, and other sweeping measures to mitigate COVID-19. 4 years later, we know what many of us suspected then. Many of those policies were successful. I'm sorry, none of those policies were successful, and many were gravely damaging. Now, the COVID health benefits of mandatory lockdowns were tiny. See, this is, and if you're new to the show, this is what we do around here. We're not just going to bellow angrily that our side always right about everything. The other side always wrong about everything. Because life's usually a little more complicated than that, and this is a great example of it. Lockdowns in the U.S. probably prevented between 4,000 and 16,000 COVID deaths. Between 4 and 16,000.
Total?
If you, with utter, unspeakable cruelty, deny people the chance to visit their dying parent, for instance, or spouse, to make sure the dying person doesn't get COVID, you're going to prevent some COVID deaths. 4 to 16,000 roughly around the country, which, as Jack has pointed out with his incredulous reaction, is not many.
Right.
It's worth pointing out, in an average year, 37,000 Americans die for the flu, for instance, according to the CDC. Lockdowns also failed to reduce infections more than a trivial amount, in part because people voluntarily alter their behavior when a bad bug is in the air, right? Coercive government policies generated few benefits and massive public costs. And this is where we get into the most important part. going to point out, first, public health agencies are exacerbated the damage by failing to keep their heads and follow standard pandemic management protocols. We talked about this a lot at the time. Before 2020, there were giant international panels who spent years figuring out if there is a pandemic, a global pandemic, what do we do? What do we not do? And it was a pretty damn reasonable plan. But during COVID, officials junked this practice by greenlighting restrictive lockdowns and intentionally stoking fear. The response overlaid enormous economic, social, educational, and health harms on top of those caused by the virus. So the government, the whole plan was to be minimally disruptive and prevent death. But that was chucked during the panic of COVID. All right, so let's get back to the 4,000 to 16,000 deaths that were prevented by the lockdowns. Now, at this point, the New York Times, NBC News, your dumbass college professor neighbor would say, you see, if it, even saving one life made it all worth it. So the response, the panic, the abandoning everything that had been worked out before overlaid enormous economic, social, educational, and health harms on top of those caused by the virus. I did say that, but I'm repeating it. Those harms are captured in part in excess deaths, the number beyond that would have been expected without a pandemic. Non-COVID excess deaths from lockdowns, the era of non-COVID medical care, societal panic. They're estimated at nearly 100,000 between April 2020 and the end of 2021. The number of lockdown and societal disruption deaths since 2020 is likely around 400,000. And we'll get into what those are in a second. But that's as many as 100 times the number of COVID deaths the lockdowns prevented. Up to 100 times more damage than good. And they get into statistically how they figure this out, but it's a lot of detail. Right. We'll post this article at armstrongandgetty.com for you to get into.
That's interesting because I'm trying to figure out a way to word this. This doesn't sound so incredibly coarse, but I think a lot of us would be willing to trade 10,000 deaths for millions and millions of kids having their lives disrupted forever. So you don't even need to trade deaths for deaths.
Yeah, fair enough.
But in this instance, you can, and it's not even close.
Honestly, I think you're right. Anybody who deals with kids and who has reckoned with the incredible after effects of the lockdowns, I think you've made the case. I'm going to go ahead and gild the lily, as they say, or over-egg the pudding, Ian. Is that the expression?
I haven't had my lily gilded in so long. I don't know if I remember how.
Closing off hospitals, cutting off access to non-COVID healthcare generated a fear of entering medical facilities. That was a profound mistake, they write, as was encouraging the false belief that hospitals were too busy to treat people who needed care. Healthcare utilization rates were at low levels at between 2020 and 22. Spring 2020, nearly half of the nation's chemotherapy patients did not get treatment.
That's incredible.
85% of living organ transplants were not completed.
God, imagine I did chemo and radiation for 9 months. So if the pandemic had hit in the middle of that, they would have just told me, we're going to stop your chemo. That's incredible.
To help you, to prevent you from getting COVID.
Which wouldn't kill me anyway, but the cancer will. Right.
One study found that there were 36% fewer calls for cardiac emergencies after March 10th compared to the year prior. That's not because people were not having heart attacks. It's because they were terrified of going to a hospital. Emergency room visits down between 40 and 50%. Some of those probably didn't need to go to the emergency room, but there were certainly 10% of them that did. Now that, all of that to me has double proved the case. We killed way more people than we saved. Again, maybe as many as 10 times as many. We haven't even gotten to the economic costs of the lockdowns.
Right.
Which are staggering. And that the after effects of that will ripple for ages through, well, for the rest of people's lives, depending on their career. Well, if they're restaurant owners,
right.
50 different examples.
Hundreds and thousands of restaurants closed permanently. That's a lot of business owners and people and chefs and everybody else.
National Bureau of Economic Research study found that the lockdown unemployment shock is expected to result in 840,000 to 1.2 million excess deaths over the next 15 to 20 years, disproportionately killing women and minorities, if that's the way you look at the world. And then, only then, do they get into the school closing nightmare crime against humanity.
Quick question for you. What if you happen to miss this unbelievable radio program?
The answer is easy, friends. Just download our podcast, Armstrong and Getty On Demand. It's the podcast version of the broadcast show, available anytime, any day, every single podcast platform known to man.
Download it now, Armstrong and Getty On Demand.
Armstrong and Getty.
The following is a high five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah.
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your High Five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
Well, here's your freedom loving quote of the day. From Alexis de Tocqueville, from his just indispensable, monumental, brilliant Democracy in America. It's a little long, but I think it's worth it. The evils which freedom sometimes brings with it are immediate. They are apparent to all, and all are more or less affected by them. The evils which extreme equality may produce are slowly disclosed. They creep gradually into the social frame. They are only seen at intervals, and at the moment at which they become most violent, habit already causes them to be no longer felt. The advantages which freedom brings are only shown by length of time, and it is always easy to mistake the cause in which they originate.
Wow.
That's some fancy pants talk, but
that is unbelievable that he had that perception.
The greatness of freedom flowers, it blooms slowly, whereas its challenges are immediately apparent, and socialism is the opposite,
right? Which is that makes it tough.
Yeah, God, was he brilliant. My goodness, I wish we could, I don't know, I don't know, clone him or something. You hate to, you know, that's a, well, nah, that's a discussion that would get too long and philosophical, but the idea that the brilliance in a spirit like his just vanishes when he dies is just too painful to contemplate. Mailbag. Hey. A lot of people believe that doesn't happen. Drop us a note, mailbag at armstrongandgetty.com. Arkansas Art from Redding, California. Writes on the topic of how to tell Jack from Joe, a nice lady who's a new listener was asking for maybe a video or something like that. Dear new listeners, writes Arkansas Art, Jack has the higher pitched voice and he often speaks very quickly as if he's jacked up. Therefore, Jack. Joe has a bit lower voice and speaks a bit more slowly as if he was, is Joe Cool. I hope that helps. Let's see, moving along. Bye bye DEI, writes Howell Mountain Michael. Guys, DEI has to go. You've discussed it at length. We have a new educational imposition, fairness, unity, kindness. F-U-K kind of rolls off the tongue. Fairness, unity, kindness.
There you go.
Thanks for the educational, informational, and humorous offerings over the last 15 to 20 years. Enjoy the day. Thank you, sir. We'll do our best.
Fun with nasty acronyms.
This is a meme sent along by Polly in Northern Nevada. I liked it. It made me chuckle aloud. Do y'all remember before the internet that people thought the cause of stupidity was the lack of access to information? Yeah, that wasn't it. Aaron is commenting on my guardrails theory, the Joe Getty unified theory of civilizations that we veer from one guardrail to the other in terms of policy. And while we're in the sweet spot somewhere in the middle, or maybe not the middle, but when we're in the sweet spot, we don't realize it. So we keep going until we hit the other guardrail. Aaron says, I love the guardrails theory, but is it possible that we've swerved hard left and broken through the guardrail, hopped the embankment, and now we're just bouncing across unknown rugged terrain in the pale moonlight?
Plunging to the bottom of a cliff?
It's funny, as guys who've driven around Northern California for decades, I picture myself plunging down the side of a mountain. Let's see, Chuck in Vancouver, Washington. The State of the Union address. How hard is it going to be for Biden's writers to craft a speech using only one syllable words?
Well, they just released their tax plan that they're going to mention during the State of the Union address.
I'll mention it. It'll never happen. Go ahead.
Yeah. But directionally, though, it is annoying. We'll get to that later.
Yeah, Chuck, I don't think he's got to go full on monosyllabic. He's just got to avoid like 12 syllable nonsense words.
True and international effort to pressure.
Who's the Speaker of the House? What's his name? I can't remember.
Nobody knows.
Anyway, he said if the president was going to be honest, he'd go out there and say the State of the Union is in decline. I thought that was a pretty good line because that's true. That's the way most people feel. He said looking at the polls and the way people feel, the State of the Union is in decline.
Or perhaps you prefer off track. That sounds a little more correctable. But, yeah, I like that. Mike something or other, I think. It's the Speaker of the House. Let's see. Oh, I love this. This is so good. Sean writes, here's what happens to change everyone's point of view of Biden. Camera pans to his invited State of the Union guests, and the increasingly bewildered newsreader reads out who they are. It's Corn Pop, the Million Miles Birthday Amtrak guy, the licensor who signed his Big Rig CDL, his father covered in coal dust, that soldier that didn't want the damn medal because the other guy died, an HR rep from the lumber company he worked at, the registrar from college where he earned 3 degrees, graduating at the head of his class, someone from the moot court, whatever the F that is, the school's football coach, Francois Mitterrand, an actual GD dog-faced pony soldier, a suspicious-looking Egyptian-looking president of Mexico, and everyone else from his hokey-ass stories.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo! Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five!
High Five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
You may know Jackson Pollock, the painter famous for his iconic drip paintings. But what do you know about his wife, artist Lee Krasner? On Death of an Artist, Krasner and Pollock, the story of the artist who reset the market for American abstract painting,
just maybe not the one you're thinking of. Listen to Death of an Artist, Krasner and Pollock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.